Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee. We'll welcome and open the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. Before we get started, I just apologize for the delay. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. We had a work group today on a rather important House bill that we were trying to get some consensus on. So really appreciate that, and thank you, and sorry to hold you up. The date, of course, Tuesday, May 7th, and we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 832 as amended, known as Spirit of 45. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 832A has a no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral. It would designate every second Sunday in August as the Spirit of 45 Day. We've received written testimony from Ms. Golda Fabian, Mr. Lou Jaffe, and Mr. Dick Tobiasen. And it was voted out of the Senate Committee 4-0 and had a Senate floor vote of 28 plus two absent members.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Thatcher, if you'll please, if you would. And you. Did you want to bring folks up?
Yes,
or you want to bring them all? So I understand that Barbara Jensen and Casey Chaffin, is that correct? And is Joy Beebe also going to join you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. I'll just start off a little bit. For the record, my name is Kim Thatcher, representing House District 25, Kaiser, Newburgh, and St. Paul. This bill, Senate Bill 832, is about not only honoring the courage, shared sacrifice, and commitment of millions of people who, not only those who serve in the military, but those who serve the country in other ways during the most destructive war in our nation's history. And my grandfather and great uncle served during the war. My father-in-law was also an Army medic. He helped liberate some of the concentration camps in Germany toward the end of the war. And this bill is about those brave men and their loved ones who supported them on the home front so we could continue to enjoy the freedoms and liberties we have in the United States. If this bill is enacted, I understand Oregon would be the third state to declare Spirit of 45 Day on the second Sunday in August to honor the service and sacrifice of the World War II generation. The greatest generation. This is not only the veterans, it's about that generation and all the greatness that they represent. I saw some recent figures that were that showed that there were nearly 150,000 Oregonians who served in the military during that war, and still 27,000 of them are alive today. I have with me two very special ladies from my legislative district who have worked tirelessly to get this bill through the Senate and over to the House. 87-year-old Joy Beebe and her daughter, Barbara Jensen, are here to tell you more about why they brought this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thatcher. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Barbara Jensen, and I'm Oregon's state representative to support America's Spirit of 45 Day initiative. This bill designates the second Sunday of every August as Spirit of 45 Day in Oregon to honor the service and sacrifice of Oregon World War II generations. In August 2010, the U.S. Congress and Senate voted unanimously in support of observance of a national Spirit of 45 Day, a day of remembrance honoring the legacy of men and women who were ordinary heroes of World War II. Spirit of 45 Day is now observed in hundreds of communities throughout America. On the second Sunday of every August, aligning with the anniversary of August 14, 1945, when President Truman announced that the war was over, the greatest generation's greatest day, victory of Japan. On that day, as the world rejoiced in the news that the most destructive war in history had ended, the U.S. assumed the leadership for laying foundation for a better future for its children and its children's children, for friend and foe, former foe alike. Life magazine published an iconic photo of a joyous sailor kissing a nurse in New York, Times Square, that has become the symbol of the Spirit of 45 Day. The year 1945 has been referred to as the hinge of history, as the new world was born and with it a new America. Every town and city has a story of August 14, 1945 to tell. The surviving members of the greatest generation that endured the difficult times of the Great Depression, achieved victory in World War II, and then went to rebuild the world are now departing. Earnestly, Spirit of 45 partners are working to preserve their memories so that the spirit lives on. Spirit of 45 Day provides an opportunity to remind us of the courage, shared sacrifice, commitment to service, so that their example of national unity can inspire future generations. Families deserve to have a day of remembrance, a time to climb back in that attic for the dated memory box of their World War II loved one, the legacy of World War II generation, and all they endured must always be remembered. Every August on Spirit of 45 Day, commemorative events take place in hundreds of locations across America, including museums, memorials, large and small community gatherings, assisted living communities, and in signature events in major cities. Acknowledgments are made at major and minor league baseball games. At the end of the day, there are thousands of wreath-laying tap ceremonies that start on the East Coast and roll across the country to California and end at the Punch Bowl in Hawaii. It is anticipated that this year, 1,945 buglers will play taps in almost every state. With mayor proclamations, community citizens partnered with buglers across America hold tributes in honor of 400,000 who made the ultimate sacrifice during World War II. Oregon has had a Spirit of 45 Day event since 2010, such as the August 14, 2000 event. There's a brochure, there's a flyer in your materials, at our Evergreen Space Museum, and sponsored by the Brookdale Senior Living people. It is a goal to continue to acknowledge the Spirit of 45 Day every year and to join the national partners in celebrating the 70th anniversary of World War II in 2015, by which time we anticipate participation in all 50 states. As part of this initiative, hundreds of volunteers have scanned military photos of men and women. You'll see my father up here, who served in World War II so that they can be carried in Veteran Day parades, displayed at events on Spirit of 45 Day, and archived permanently on the internet for future generations. Wedding photos from World War II years that represent the women on the home front continue to be scanned and added to the mosaic that is shown every August 14th in bicoastal events in Times Square and San Diego. America's youth is being called to the members of this generation to hear and record their firsthand memories. Youth participation is an essential part of the Spirit of 45 campaign, and 2013 will bring the beginning of essay contests where youth can describe what the Spirit of 45 means to them. In an effort to firmly establish this day, leaders organize signature events every quarter. In February, a leadership conference in San Diego is held with over 150 sponsors, Walgreens, Ancestry.com, the National Parks is involved, and they get together and decide what kind of leadership activities will happen this year and at the 70th anniversary in Times Square. In May, there is a Memorial Day parade on both the East and West Coasts, and they encourage those parades throughout the other states. In August, while smaller events take place across the country, Washington, D.C., at the World War II Memorial, holds its major event on August 14th. In November, youth in New York City carry photos like my dad in the New York City Veterans Day Parade and in San Jose and San Diego. Collaborative Spirit of 45 partners include over a dozen organizations, some of which I mentioned, some I haven't. History Channel, the Association of State and Local Historical Societies, Historic Navy Ships Association, teams in Major and Minor League Baseball, the American Society on Aging, Hewlett-Packard, U-Haul, Honor Flight, and Assisted Living Communities. In partnership with the Oregon Honor Flight, the Memorial Foundation, and with support of the Veterans, Oregon Veterans Affairs, and the Historical Society, the Keep the Spirit Alive campaign is pleased to support the resolution for the State of Oregon for the observance of the Spirit of 45 Day, an annual day in remembrance in honor of 150,000 men and women of Oregon who served in World War II and 3,758 who made the supreme sacrifice. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is my mother, Joy Beebe. I think she got me into this about a year ago just by producing a book that she wrote about her memoirs. My dad passed away in 1995, and 17 years later, on her 67th anniversary, we all get in the mail a book, 250 pages of the memoirs of coming to, living in the bombing of London and coming to America, and how to give back as a generation to future generations.
Wonderful. Ms. Beebe, if you'll state your name for the record and say what's on your mind, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews. I am Joy Beebe, born and raised in England. I married an American soldier in 1945 who was stationed in my country in World War II. As a war bride, I came to the Salem-Keizer area, and I have been resident of Keizer since 1948. I grew up on the outskirts of London in the 1940s, experiencing the Battle of Britain and the Blitz, followed by Hitler's vengeance weapons, the V1 and V2. Many sleepless nights were spent either in the cupboard under the stairs or under our Morrison shelter, a large steel table issued to families by the government to protect them in their own homes. Many Londoners stayed night after night in the Underground Railway stations for safety or because their homes were bombed. Surprisingly, the people of London never lost spirit. We always believed we would survive. Winston Churchill convinced us. His speeches were so encouraging, although we always knew we were alone. Churchill did too. After the December the 7th, 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, America no longer wanted to wait and no longer thought they should keep the isolationist policy. Young men rushed to sign up to keep the world free. One summer evening, I was sent to the south of England countryside by my government employer to help the land army girls harvest potatoes. Early that evening, there was a lot of noise coming from the main road. So several of us walked over to see what was happening, and we were astounded. Hundreds and hundreds of American soldiers were marching down the road to Southampton in full uniform with their duffel bags and rifles, singing and shouting. Officers were traveling in jeeps and other soldiers in cars, tanks, and large trucks with guns under tarps, a line that never seemed to end. It went on for hours. As it grew light, barrage balloons rose into the sky, hundreds of them, covering the sky for miles. We watched for hours while this went on for two solid days. It was the 5th and 6th of June, 1944, D-Day. As far as I know, the potatoes may still be in the ground. We were watching history in the making. They were marching to the invasion of the Normandy beaches. When the Americans came into the battle, the tides turned. America had power, and their men were enthused about what they were to see and do. However, they did not realize what was ahead, just as we had not known what would fall from the skies for us. War is shocking. When they moved to face the enemy, they watched their buddies fall, yet carried on with valor and determination. Though the road was long and difficult, they finally won with memories too sad to share. World War II veterans deserve all the recognition they get. They were happy to come home to their families and to rebuild their lives. We must give them the honor they deserve, the thanks they richly deserved 68 years ago. Bless them. I came to America as a war bride, and I know that I, too, need to give them the praise they earned with hardship and horror they endured, so that you and I may live as free as we do.
Thank you, ma'am. And if you'll just remain seated, we'll see if we have questions of the committee. But let me just say, with your testimony, we also have about 20 more pages, and of them is a snapshot of you and Carl. And what a great picture on your wedding day. And thanks for including that as well. So, members of the committee, do we have questions for the panel? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My mother-in-law was from Suffolk.
Oh, really?
And yeah. Her other kinfolk was from Maidenhead. And she was in the London Ballet, and when the war broke out, they put her in a munitions factory. And then they decided to go back to the ballet and start the arts again after a period of time when the people in England decided they would rather have art than worry about her messing up bullets. But her husband came from Montana and joined the Canadian Air Force before the United States got in the war and fought the Battle of Britain while you were there. Mm-hmm. And he was at Bobington, an air base outside of London. And eventually, when the United States got in the war, he was transferred into the Army Air Corps and became as a captain and became the personal pilot for General Doolittle. So, have some great stories, and I'm sure you have some great stories as well.
Well, yes, I think we all did.
And Barbara just passed away this last December. She was 89, I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're all getting up there. There won't be many others.
Well, Sherm's doing well. He's 95, I think, 96, something like that, doing extremely well.
So. Thank you. That was a lovely story.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my mom and I have been together for about a year on a journey across America to visit some of these sites that the National Office has. And we were in San Diego for the leadership conference and the dedication of that KISS statue. And there was a gal there that was about 20 years old. She had written a book on her uncles who were Doolittle guys. Mm-hmm. So that would be an interesting tie if those two ran into each other.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Representative.
Just a follow-up. General Doolittle's granddaughter called my father-in-law because she found out that he was the personal pilot and called him, and she said, well, you have to make yourself authentic. Tell me something about the general that no one else knew. So Sherm immediately said, you know, I remember one time I heard a noise and I looked around the back of me and General Doolittle was on his hands walking up into the aircraft on the ladder. And she said, yes, you're authentic.
Very nice.
Any questions from the committee? I'll just say a few things because we had a chance to meet in my office and it's a pleasure to hear you speak today. Thank you very much. You were very quiet that day. But I appreciated you being here and your testimony, and also for Representative Thatcher. My concern isn't whether or not we'll move this bill at all. I really think that our intent is to get this done today and to work this bill and move it. My concern is what happens on the second Sunday is what matters most. If we dedicate this day, and that's going to be this day of remembrance in the spirit of 45, and the younger generation will embrace the opportunity to get to know these, just the greatest generation of our time, then what happens to the thought when we portray an image that we're going to do something and nothing gets done? So as you know, my argument, not opposing at all, but my compelling argument is find the group that takes us on to do something. We all want to see the World War II Memorial built in the worst way and to have that on the Capitol grounds. The state needs to have a World War II Memorial. Our veterans, their families, the generation needs a place to go. And we've had a hard time getting that done. So I really hope that this isn't just a piece of legislation that we feel good and has no follow-up. Because really what needs to happen is communities need to embrace the opportunity to pay respect to this. But I can just share with you, when I go to Memorial Day events or Veterans Day events, it's usually the same 15 or 20 people that gather, and everybody else is out of town to go camping. And isn't it odd that the reason they get to do that is because some folks have fought for their freedom? So I hope that we do more than just what's easy and pass this bill. I hope there's some oomph to this opportunity.
Can you respond to that if you like? In response to that, the National Office is very interested in what Oregon is doing. We have some opportunities here that we can uncover pretty quickly if we want to. We can work together as a family. I met with Cameron Smith, the ODVA director, just a couple weeks ago, and we can tie some of these issues together in terms of solutions that we're building for the Memorial Foundation, some of the things we're doing in Honor Flight. There are ways in which our communities can work together, and the spirit and the national effort is willing to not only create some of those suggestions, but give us models in how we can have fundraisers and make things happen more actively here. I think it's a good opportunity to work together.
Thank you, and thanks for bringing it forward. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, we also had the opportunity to meet in my office, and to your point, Chair Matthews, one of the things we talked about is we're also, besides the memorial that is kind of static and out there and there's nobody manning it and we won't have somebody standing out there explaining World War II history here on the Capitol grounds, but we will have, in some point here in the near future, the Oregon Military History Museum, and I think it's important. I said we need to get a copy of her book to the museum, and I think there's an opportunity to tie in that history piece there in the museum and work to find a way to keep that connection there as well and maybe have them be the keepers of that history.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, Chairman Matthews, members of the committee. This is all about a spirit that gets passed on to generations. This is not another memorial. We'll complement that, and it's not another Veterans Day. This is about taking a spirit, courage, self-sacrifice, and the unity of a country and its partner nations that rebuilt America. And how do you take those values and instill them, inspire future generations? We have a gal here, Casey.
I'll introduce her if you don't mind. I'll bring her to the dais, but I'll take care of that for you unless you'd like her to join this panel.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah. And how do you embrace that with the younger generation? I'd find somebody to build you an app and get it loaded to a smartphone so they're reminded the spirit of 45 is alive. Thank you for that, though.
That's exactly.
It's a good idea. I get a lot of nobody listens. Thank you. And thanks very much for your testimony today. And with that, we will bring up Casey Chapman. And I believe that Casey's going to share a perspective of the younger generation. Please come forward if you will. Thank you, Representative.
Hello, Representative Chair Matthews and members of the committee. My name is Casey Chaffin, and I am an eighth grader at Straub Middle School. My interest in World War II started with a report on Rosie the Riveter last year. However, one cannot research only one aspect of World War II. As I researched the Rosies, I found out about rationing and the hardships people went through during the war, not to mention the abundance of gold stars that represented lost loved ones. Now, that was just the beginning. After I finished that report, the years of 1939 and 1945 were embedded in my brain. I love finding out even the most random facts. To be truthful, the random facts are the ones that I find most interesting. Because of this newly found interest in World War II, my mom bought me Mrs. Beebe's book, Snapshots of a War Bride's Life, for me, which in turn led to me meeting her. This heightened my interest of World War II even further. To hear her story from almost 70 years ago and how active she still is now made me respect the people of the greatest generation even more. Something I found intriguing about the era is the trust people put into their communities. People could leave their doors unlocked and ask their neighbors to babysit without worry of something bad happening. Nowadays, you can't turn around without someone wronging someone else. Also, I believe most kids my age could learn from this generation. The 1940s were a time before cell phones and their internet, and people, in my opinion, lived fuller lives. A lot of kids think history is boring, but that's because of the general information we are presented. In history class, you don't get to hear about the little guys, including war brides, who made the era what it was. You don't get to learn about the small tidbits of information that make World War II interesting. In short, World War II changed the lives of many, and as a generation of plugged-in children, we are forgetting the past. Many kids' worlds now revolve around technology. I think the kids I go to school with should know that there are a lot harder things our grandparents and great-grandparents had to do than update a Facebook account. I think they should know we wouldn't be here if our ancestors didn't fight battles for us years before we were born. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And what school do you go to, Casey?
Straub Middle School.
Straub Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
So what grade are you in?
Eighth.
Wow. And your teacher knows you're here today and this is part of an assignment? Or what's...
No. I wrote a report in February, and I chose to do respect for World War II veterans as the topic of this report. And then I sent it to Mrs. Beebe, who I'd already gotten in contact with, and then she, when this bill started to come up to have testimony for, she invited me to speak and write, and I wrote a little speech, and then
Wonderful. That's
how I got here.
We're happy to write you a note to excuse you from class.
That's right.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Can you sign that, Mr. Chair?
I would. It would have more clout if you did, sir. Anybody have any questions for Ms. Chaffin? Thank you for taking the time. I really do appreciate that. And you're right. You know, they didn't have cyberbullying back with the Spirit of 45 folks. They weren't updating their Facebook accounts and everything kids are doing today. And kids need to take just a quick time out, and adults do too, to recognize that if we don't talk to this generation now, we're never going to get to hear the stories that are really worth hearing and repeating. And so wonderful. I'm told that there's a two-minute video that we might benefit from, and I want to be respectful too. I think we have time for that. But if we'd like to watch, now this is this the honor flight?
The honor flight, yes.
So this is the honor flight, and there's some information about that available as well. This will be linked.
About veterans going back to their memorial.
To see this actually come to life was absolutely amazing. It exceeded every expectation that everybody ever had.
They came home with their duffel bags and put them in the back hall and never talked about it again.
And then we found out that we were going to Iwo Jima.
When I was liberated, I only weighed about 70 pounds. There was only three of us that survived.
Your heart just goes, oh,
man. It took 60 years for us to build a memorial to these guys.
They never got the welcome home that they deserve.
He has cancer. He kept saying, I'm going to be strong enough to make it to the World War II memorial.
We fly World War II veterans to see their memorial at no cost to them.
I'm Bob Dole, and my wife Elizabeth, we come out here a lot. We got to let everybody know of the sacrifices made by that generation.
You never forget it. You never forget it.
The ones that didn't come back are the heroes.
That's one day in their life they'll never forget. That's what it's all about.
I met Ed. I never knew he was alive. And
we will never, ever forget.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. This is wonderful. And so that's the honor flight. And there will be, there's information. I believe that we'll talk about how we can access that information for the committee folks in terms of when the next flight is. The most recent flight, I believe, was two Sundays ago. And they came into the Portland airport to quite a reception. So
there'll be a flight May 15th and out of Bend, the Bend honor flight, and then September 18th.
Great.
And Oregon does it a little differently, Chair and members of the committee. Most of the states take them for one day to see seven memorials, and Oregon takes them for 2.5 days to see 14 to 20 memorials and places in Washington, D.C., including the Holocaust Museum.
And again, just to reiterate, this is not about just the veterans. This is about the generation. It is an amazing generation. I can imagine being a young soldier being deployed, and I would be enthusiastic to meet a bunch of young English girls with your accent as well. But they were on a mission, and they served proudly, and so did the folks at home, and your Rosie the Riveters and other folks that were in the shipyard. So thank you so much for bringing this forward. And as I said, it's easy, I would imagine, to move this forward. The hard part is going to be to making sure that we do it justice and to perform the work that needs to be done so that it's just not another Sunday on the calendar where folks don't even realize that we have done this and we have work to do. So
let's keep communicating and hopefully working with and collaborating with the partners we have in the community and our agencies.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, and thanks for your time today. And so was there anybody else here to testify on Senate Bill 832 as amended? You all did a wonderful job, and you, young lady, fabulous. Outstanding to have young students come forward and do the job you did today. Thank you. And with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 832 as amended. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 832 amended. And I'll entertain a motion.
Chair Matthews, I move Senate Bill 832A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves Senate Bill 832A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll. Mike, if you could, please.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Excused.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Excused.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. The motion passes. And I understand that Representative Thatcher and Representative Parrish will co-carry the bill. So Senate Bill 832 will be carried by Representatives Thatcher and Parrish. Thank you very much. And we will move forward with the spirit of 45. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time today, everybody involved. And I have not gaveled out of the work session.
Oh, you can
have
still vote.
I did not.
Yeah,
so we are currently, Representative Huffman, we are currently in a work session and had called the roll, and I believe we can just call Representative Huffman for his vote without anything further, correct?
That's great.
Representative Huffman?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 832 as amended. Thank you. Carried by Representative Thatcher and Representative Parrish. So, wonderful. Thanks very much. And with that, I think Representative Witt may have stepped outside, and Representative Esquivel, you have somewhere you need to be at about 1400?
No, I have about almost an hour.
Oh, we should be able to get through. Okay, then we'll hold the work sessions for the end then. We're going to stand at these for just one moment. Thanks to the great recommendation of Ms. Edwards. Yes, we'll stand at these. Thank you. Thank you, and we'll reconvene the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 34 as amended. Ms. Edwards, could you remind us what this bill is?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 34A has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no subsequent referral. You'll recall it was heard previously on April 30th. This bill would increase the number of home or farm loans eligible individuals may receive from the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs from 2 to 4. Declares an emergency and is effective upon passage.
Great. Thank you for that.
Chair Matthews.
Yes,
there we
please.
Go. Chair Matthews, I move Senate Bill 34A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves Senate Bill 34A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any further discussion? Representative Esquivel?
I'm very happy that we're approaching this like we discussed, I don't know, a session or two ago. We've discussed this, and it's finally coming to fruition.
You were discussing this issue when I came in, so it's been a couple sessions for sure, and probably before that too, sir. Thank you. So is there any further discussion? Seeing none, would you call the roll, please, Mike?
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Excused.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. Motion passes. And we'll need a carrier for Senate Bill 34.
I'd carry it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Esquivel will carry the bill. Thank you. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 34 as amended. And open up a work session on Senate Bill 35. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 35 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. You'll recall that this bill was heard previously on April 30th. Also, there is no subsequent referral. The bill would modify the limit on home and farm loans made by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to match the maximum loan-to-value or combined loan-to-value ratio permitted by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Home Loan Guarantee Program. It declares an emergency and would be effective upon passage.
Thank you for that. And is there any discussion?
Got to make a motion.
Entertain a motion.
Chair Matthews, I move Senate Bill 35 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves Senate Bill 35 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Boone, how you doing?
No, I was putting on a bracelet.
Any further discussion? Is there any discussion on the motion? Just take a little while to wiggle on. If you do that, I'm going to call on you. Thank you for that. Mike, could you please call the roll? Get us back on track.
Yeah, hopefully.
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bagan?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. Motion passes. And we will need a carrier for Senate Bill 35. Mm-hmm. Anybody wishing to carry Senate Bill 35?
Senator Olson. No, he's not.
You want me to carry them both? I don't care.
I can carry Senate Bill 35. The chair can carry it unless you... Fine. It's been an issue of your concern for more years than me, sir, but I'll carry Senate Bill 35. Thank you. Appreciate that. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 35. And with that, timing is everything, is it not? So we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 598 as amended. And Ms. Edwards, if you could tell us what we're all about. And I see the good senator has arrived.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 598A has a minimal revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact. It would require operators to enable public safety answering points, also known as PSAPs, to obtain street address and building name at a minimum from automatic location identification databases for 911 calls. It applies to multi-line telephone systems installed 1 year or more after passage. We do have written testimony from John Lolo, the chair of Clackamas County Board of Commissioners.
Thank you.
You can
and
tell
I see
the
we are
Senate's here.
Senator Alan Wilson. Boy, they're down a few members, so this is what they do. Just kidding, sir. Thank you for taking time, Senator, and happy to have you, Bill, and thanks for coordinating the time with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chair Matthews, Vice Chair Parrish, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. The Senate Bill 598 is a product of over 2 years of work. In 2011, I was tasked to lead a work group on 911 issues, and we started that, and on our first hearing, we had over 90 members, 90 stakeholders there from 911 groups. Our second hearing, we brought... Pardon?
Senator, I'm sorry to interrupt you, and I have to. Could you put your name on the record for us, please, sir?
I screwed up. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My name is Senator Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, which runs from Charbonneau to Estacada, from Gladstone down to Malawa. Or Malino, I should say, the heart of Clackamas County.
Thank you, sir.
So anyhow, back to 598. And our second work group was over in Bend, and we had 70 folks there to work on this issue. To bring forth next generation technology in the 911 systems. It's interesting, as I carried this bill to the floor, I had two cans and a string and said that this is our technology of today and we need to look to the technology of the future. This is a very good bill worked out by the work groups. As a matter of fact, we did have a few issues with it. We put together a third work group and we went word by word to get the exact verbiage that we needed in this bill, and we still had to amend it to make it more precise. But it's a good bill to lead Oregon into the future with next-generation technologies. And basically what it asks the public to do if they're building new buildings, particularly high-rises, office buildings, etc., that when we dial 911, we can know what room, not only the street address, but what room the call is coming from. I know with new technology and the wireless, this bill probably will be antiquated in the next few years, but as it is now, it's a very good bill to help 911 find those folks that are in need. And I would ask that you support this bill and move it forward to the floor so that we can get on with improving our 911 system. And I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate the testimony. Questions of the good senator? The look on your face is the same as where I'm at. Go ahead, sir.
Like, this sounds like deja vu.
Yes.
Haven't we had this bill before, Senator?
I don't know if you've had Fine at 598 before. This is the only one I've been working on.
Well, I remember a bill just like this.
It was, and Representative, you're correct. I believe it was in 2009 that we dealt with this issue. And I don't necessarily, I think
I don't
it came
know what
out of the House,
it,
and I don't necessarily think it made it out of the Senate.
I think it made it through the House, didn't it?
I believe so, but Marty Plotner will be up here shortly.
He's back there. He doesn't know.
You know. Yeah, right now I'm getting head nods and hand signals, and we'll figure it out. But it is very familiar. And I remember at the time, you know, I mean, my profession being a firefighter and having been a law enforcement, having a physical address on, and at the time we were talking about dorm facilities, and not knowing where the call was coming from, but it was somewhere on the campus, was just not good enough. And so having these answering points was critical. And we'll figure this out. But I appreciate you coming forward today, sir.
The other thing I'd like to put on the record, it's not for buildings that are now currently built. It's for those buildings in the future. But it would be nice if we could do it and incorporate it in older buildings. But it's a great tool. We have to have it because, as they say, you know, you get those first few minutes of an emergency. Those are the most important, and figure out where they're at. And this is a good bill. And I think the reason it's moving now is that they actually put a legislature in charge of the work group and was able to bring the legislation forward. You know, other times I had heard that they were just, you know, folks, and then they pass it on to legislators. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate you moving this forward and to the floor, and we'll get this done.
And the 911 system, I mean, it can be problematic because the enhanced system is rather expensive, and a lot of local jurisdictions are subsidizing the account because there's just not enough funds to pay for the enhanced system of the 911. And it continues to, as you said, 5 years from now, this may be obsolete.
Right.
But it just continues to move, which is great technology-wise, but from a service delivery, it's a moving target. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You rattled my cage. And I might thank you, Senator, for bringing this forward. And I hope that we do expand it to the old buildings, too. But one way we can ensure that is we can pass my bill that won't allow sweeps of the 911 fund. We can make sure that the extension goes through, and we can make sure that the prepaid cell phones are charged. You're waving at me. But I'm just... You're trying to rattle me, I can tell.
Not at all.
But we do have some things in play now that will really help assist this. And you're absolutely right when you get a call like that. And I think Representative Esquivel, you brought up the first time it came around, we talked about hotels.
Right.
And that was a huge issue because think of the Bellagio.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge, huge hotel. And think of a 911 call there. You probably get more than one at a time, considering. But that would be... You know, it can be the difference between life and death. This
Chair,
is a great
Chair Matthews,
bill.
I noticed you had the Spirit of 45 on
Yes,
it.
Sir. We just had testimony
I,
and passed the bill to the floor.
I just carried that bill on the floor on the Senate side and to send it over to you. It's a great bill. Rep Boone, Chair Matthews, Rep Boone, thank you very much because I also have a 911 sweeps bill. And we're in coordination because we both believe that when we take 911 money out of the system, we cannot upgrade our technologies fast enough because it takes too long to build that pot up.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. My bill is a little bit different than Rep Boone's in that we can eventually sweep it if the economic forecast is so and the governor wants to put his name on it. But 911 is the only technology that we have to save lives, and it's something that we need to protect.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the work you guys do on this, too.
Absolutely. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you guys talking all over the field because as you were talking, something came to me, a question. Senator, who is this bill directed at specifically? You and I have done a lot of building in our past. Is it it wouldn't be the developer necessarily because it, you know, it doesn't go into the building walls or the infrastructure necessarily, but is it the... Is it directed at the manufacturers of phone equipment that would be types of phone systems that go into like large commercial buildings, or who exactly will be responsible for making sure that the equipment communicates and is capable of doing what the bill requires?
Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman, that's an exceptional question. It's actually geared to the building owner. He would provide the equipment that would be necessary. For example, if you built a hotel, the equipment owner would the owner of the building would put in the telephone equipment that would be the hardwired to every room. If you built a commercial complex that had five or six different buildings and they are all hubbed into one phone central station, they would be responsible and liable for that phone equipment, so that you could say that it was building B and this part of the property, etc. So it would be the building owner or the person that leases the building, and they bring in their own phone equipment, like they go call Ma Bell and say, come in and put this in. They would be responsible. Those people that actually run the equipment and have the answering people to answer those phones, they would be responsible for that equipment.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes.
And that's great. So it's basically the responsibility is put on the backs of the person that ultimately is responsible for putting in the phone equipment. Is there anything on equipment manufacturers? How does this technology work? Is it put into the phone system? And then the individual sets, like, you know, my commercial building was not large, and so we only had maybe a dozen different rooms and sets. Does the manufacturer put some kind of a chip in those to identify, or how does the practicality work? And I know I'm getting into the weeds, but I'm curious.
Chair Matthews, Rep. Hoffman, I'm not the most fluent in how this technology works, as other people don't know this much better than I. But the base station, if you will, of it, like a computer, the base station has all the technology in it to know that if room 409, the wire runs from the base station up to room 409, they know that 409 is the phone that's been picked up, and 409 would be the one that would flash on the screen at the 911 center.
Computers, basically it's a programming thing,
right?
Then, so,
right.
Okay.
And the other problem with it is, of course, we have VoIP, Voice over Internet Protocol, which means that they can pick up and walk around with a phone, and that's difficult to follow that phone around to find out exactly where they are. So those are some of the technologies we're going to have problems with. But the fact is that in the near future, we should be able to have this technology to move our 911 system forward.
Yes, thank you. And I know that Marty Plotner has some answers to some of these questions as well, so that would be fine. Representative Escobar.
I was just going to basically say the same thing he did. It's kind of like a central processing unit where all this goes into the central part of it, and then it's fanned out according to the rooms. And then when they make a contact, it comes right back to the CPU and goes to wherever they want it. In the emergency room.
Yeah, and the bill also addresses if there's a need for a prefix dialing to 911, and I think that's more like an outreach effort to educate people. They have X amount of time to make that known to whoever. That might be in a short stay situation or maybe in a college dorm. But this, again, is perspective. It's from today forward,
right,
or date of passage and signage,
right,
forward.
Mr. Chair, if my memory serves me correct, too, it wasn't that expensive to do that when you did it on the initial building of the building, whereas if you have to retrofit it, then it gets
right.
It gets spendy. But
right,
when you build a new building and you put it in, it's not that big of a deal.
No, and you know, we're using all kind of different technologies that are available now, but they still are using hardwired lines,
mm-hmm,
for all the hotels and stuff like that, which is probably where most of the problems would come in at.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Any further questions of the senator? I know your time is valuable, sir. Thanks for coming over and testifying and presenting the bill, and thanks for what you're sending over. We appreciate it. A great day, sir. And with that, we'll bring up, if we could, Marty Plotner and Daryl Fuller, please. Gentlemen, welcome. You start whatever order you determine. Give us your name for the record and move from there.
Good afternoon, Chairman Matthews, Vice Chair Parrish, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marty Plotner. I'm the Director of the Office of Emergency Management for the Oregon Military Department. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 598 as amendment, which establishes the requirements for 911 calls placed from a multi-line telephone system. In the 911 business, every second counts when public safety responders are attempting to quickly ascertain a caller's location and provide the needed assistance. These response times are often delayed in situations where a 911 caller is located in an industrial complex or a campus environment, as many times one primary phone number or address is used for all buildings. Senate Bill 598 seeks to require an emergency response location identifier that includes at least the street address and public name for the location which the 911 call originates. 22 states currently have 911 legislation enacted or pending that requires organizations over a certain size or purchasing a new phone system for a building to provide information so that the appropriate primary safety answering point, or PSAP, is able to query the automatic location identifier and obtain the caller location information. The Office of Emergency Management supports any bill that will provide those public safety answering points and responders with additional critical information necessary to locate 911 callers. This concludes my testimony. I'll be glad to answer a couple of the questions that were asked previously, if I may. The language on the previous bill that was voted down in 2009 did not leave a time limit or a time extension to adapt to that new process, and it included both old existing buildings and new construction, which is why it was defeated in 2009. The target is, in fact, those homeowners or primary users of those facilities, and in the cost question on the adaptability, most phone systems that have been installed in the last decade have a switch or a chip that can be installed that authorize what's called a PSALI, which is the private switch automatic location information, and that's the information needed for those responders. Thank you. That concludes my testimony.
And this is all done at a computer base as described earlier by the Senator.
Representative Huffman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marty, what's the practicality of the rollout on this? Who do we inform? I'm just trying to think, as a business guy, if I go into an office complex and I buy this phone system, who tells me what this law is that the Oregon legislature just passed and that I need to buy the OLSSI whatever chip?
Chairman Matthews, Representative Huffman, it's my understanding that that should go to the building codes and for modification and new construction, and that's where it'll be located at. Okay. Also, most of the building inspectors at the local level through the PSABs will also have that information.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Okay, and things could be different, but I've never had to go to building codes or planning department to get a permit to put in a phone system. So Doug's going to be there telling me.
Chairman Matthews, Representative, remember this is for new construction, so it would be part of the permitting requirements under the new construction. This bill doesn't require existing construction, and so it would only be if you were installing something new or you were upgrading, and then those standards would be known.
I guess I'm trying to picture. And I've never put in a large commercial complex, and so I don't know exactly what infrastructure is required, but I know a lot of them are put in as expandable shells, and companies come in and lease half the building, and they put in their own phone system and stuff. So this would be required ahead of them coming in the infrastructure of the building?
Or when they made that adaption, to that phone system, it should be covered, yes. Yes, Representative.
Okay.
It'll work.
It'll work. It will. And it references the ORS as 403.105, 403.250. I think that's dealing with hallways and some other issues. I think those are in the building code. Is that correct? So
that's
that might be the link that we're talking about. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association in support of Senate Bill 598. As you probably know, anytime one of you call me, the phone number that displays on my caller ID is exactly the same, whether you're in the State Capitol building, Boley in Portland, or some other state agency in Klamath Falls. Every state phone number has the same caller ID. Now, this isn't going to solve that problem, but it gives you some indication of the difficulty that law enforcement would have when trying to figure out where you're calling from, whether it's a government or whether it's the Nike campus or whether it's some other location. Now, with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek to the good chair, you know, firefighters have it a little easier than law enforcement does because all they got to do is follow the smoke, and they can find where they're going a little easier than perhaps law enforcement can when they get a 911 call, and in a lot of cases, somebody will call 911 and hang up. And then we have to find out, well, was that an accidental call or is there an emergency and that person had to hang up because they're in distress? and having very little information to go on to figure out where that person is. So the better information we get through the 911 system in terms of who's calling and where they're at, the better off we're going to be able to determine whether an emergency exists or not, and to resolve the issue in a way that enhances public safety. So we certainly think this is a really good idea. Technology is changing quickly, as many of you probably know. You know, on your iPhones, I can push a button and tell you exactly where my daughter is within about 10 feet because of the GPS. So we're certainly in an environment where this sort of information ought to be available to law enforcement and to other first responders so that we can do what we need to do for the people we serve. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I appreciate that. And just for the record, it is critically important to firefighters, too, because we not only respond on fires, but emergency medical needs as well. So, but I appreciate that.
You follow smoke, though, don't you? I just wanted to cut. No,
thank you, Representative.
Follow smoke or blowing smoke?
Let's see, it's open mic night at the Veterans Committee. Anybody have any questions for the good of the order? From this great individual and Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, was Mr. Fuller wanting this bill passed? Or I'm not sure now.
I'm struggling to determine that myself, sir.
Can we throw it on the floor and step on it now?
It is. I think, and I appreciate you bringing forward the perspective. As I recall, in 2009, it was about some modifying current existing bill. It would have had a, you know, an impact to businesses and others. So this is moving forward from this day of new construction, so I think it's a reasonable ask. Any questions of the committee? Any questions of the panel from the committee? Seeing none, gentlemen, as always, thank you. Appreciate your time. Is there anybody here else here that would like to testify on Senate Bill 598?
Plus cat issues.
Bridget Burns from OUS. Looks like she would like to testify on Senate Bill 598. How are you today?
Good.
Great to have you here.
Hi, everyone. Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff, OUS. I just wanted to comment on the fiscal that we provided for this and clarify that we are comfortable with the legislation because of the change to making it so that it's only applicable to buildings that are going to be built in the future. Our challenge with the with it prior was because with our dormitories and just the complicated nature of things, it would have actually been about a $50,000 annual personnel management system we would have to implement to be able to maintain this, just because students move constantly from room to room, and that fluctuation would make it so that there would be an obligation that that was what our fiscal reflected. However, with it being in the future, we think that we can manage it much more reasonably. So I just wanted to let you know that was our perspective, and that most of our students use cell phones, so that's what we're more worried
yes,
about now.
They do.
But happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, that's all.
Thank you for that. Any questions, Ms. Burns? Yes.
Just one thing you said, thank you, Mr. Chair, that said students move room to room. Wouldn't this be just a location issue?
Chair Matthews, Representative Boone, yes, but initially we were under the impression that we needed to provide very specifically who was going to be in each room, so keeping that up to date, and again, the bill has been altered in a way that makes it much more reasonable for us to be able to implement, so, but yeah, we still have the same challenges that I think hotels would as well.
Great, and it's kind of, you know, almost humorous that there were several of us that were on the committee in 2009. We passed this bill thinking that it was actually being done now. But we tend to lose perspective sometimes. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Any further comments from the committee on Senate Bill 598? Nobody else here to testify on Senate Bill 598? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 598. And with that, I think that is all the work that we had to be conducted. Is there anything for the good of the order from the members? Nothing? Well, appreciate it very much. And I think Representative Conger did an outstanding job in today's remonstrance. Just a very heartfelt, you know, our apologies to the family and recognition of the dedication and the loss of life to an Oregon resident. So. That's unfortunate, and the death toll continues, and I think that that's what charges this committee to continue to move forward and press on. There are a lot of policy discussions still to be had between now and signing die, and there will be even more that will continue to progress beyond that in the interim, and look forward to being a part of that with this great team. Thank you very much, and with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.